time now is 8:30. It's on February 19, 2020, and I call the meeting of the Complaint Screening Committee of the Arizona Board of Psychologists to gather to order. Ms. Poe, would you call the roll?
Yes, Madam Chair. Ms. Shreve?
Present.
Dr. Davis Wilson?
Present.
Dr. Flowers?
Present.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Item number three is the approval of the January 15, 2020 regular session minutes. Can I do both minutes at one time? And the January 15, 2020 executive session minutes. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
Madam Chair, I need to recuse from part of the minutes because I wasn't present. I recused for a case.
Okay, so then Dr. Davis Wilson, can you motion to approve? And I'll second. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
And one recusal. Okay, thank you. We're going to go to item number four, and that's the case discussions and decisions. The Complaint Screening Committee, pursuant to Arizona Revised Statute 3220-81H, may dismiss the complaints appearing on this agenda or refer them to the full board for further consideration. Complaints dismissed by the committee shall not be disclosed in response to a telephone inquiry or placed on the board's website pursuant to ARS 3220-81H1. Upon a vote of the majority of the quorum, the committee may go into executive session on any item on the agenda pursuant to ARS 38431.03A2 to review confidential records, or A3 to receive confidential legal advice from the board's attorney. For those in attendance, please be aware that the chair reserves the right to change the order of the items on the agenda based on the parties present and request to speak. A person or representative of a person who has filed or received a complaint and who is present may make a brief statement to the committee by filling out a speaker's request form and giving it to the board staff. The committee may also have questions for those that speak. Please only, and this is very important, please only use initials when referring to patients or children. So just the initials, not the names. Be aware that content of many records involving these complaints is confidential, and the content should not be discussed in a public meeting. But be advised that a committee can go into executive session to discuss confidential records. The first complaint to be discussed is complaint number 2020 regarding Dr. Connie Byburn. Dr. Flowers, you're the lead on this case. Would you like to provide a summary?
Yes, well, thank you, Madam Chairman. The complainant stated that the complaint is RC. She said that on November 27th, 2012, there was a court order which stated that both parents must be in agreement regarding the son's medical treatment. RC said that at a court hearing on October 28, 2019, he found out that Dr. Byburn had been with her son and with the son's father for three therapy sessions. Dr. Byburn gave the son advice regarding his behavior. Dr. Byburn had not obtained permission from RC to treat her son. Dr. Byburn was not court appointed in this case. The licensee responded. She said that RC is involved in a legal dispute with the father, otherwise I think her ex-husband, over the custody of the son. Dr. Byburn said that she was not treating or giving therapy to the son. The son participated as a collateral to the father's therapy for two sessions, August the 8th and August the 16th of 2019. Dr. Byburn represents that she did not need to obtain RC's consent for the son to participate in two play therapy sessions as a collateral to the father's therapy. The father received services from Dr. Byburn because he wanted to be a better parent. Dr. Byburn said that the record demonstrates that Dr. Byburn documented that she made the father aware that he was a client and that the son was only in two sessions as collateral to father's treatment. Dr. Pyburn did not need RC's informed consent for the son's collateral participation because she did not provide any therapeutic care to the son. The father asked Dr. Pyburn to testify at a court hearing on October 28, 2019. Dr. Pyburn testified at the family court hearing on that date. This concludes my summary of the complaint.
Thank you, Dr. Flowers. I believe the complainant is on the line. Is that correct?
Correct.
All right. If you could just introduce yourself using your initials only, please.
Sure. My name is RC.
RC? And would you like to make a brief statement to the board?
Sure. First of all, thank you to the committee for taking my statement via phone. And thank you for the summary. That is correct. On October 28, 2019, at a temporary order hearing, was the first time that I found out that my son had been seeing Dr. Pyburn in conjunction with father. However, the progress notes that I submitted to the committee and as exhibits do refer to parent-child family psychotherapy. They also have content that includes made up secret handshakes that reminded him of manners. Dr. Tiber did indicate that this was family therapy in her progress notes. In addition, she said that they drew together to make things out of each other's squiggles. They had structured play, they had play therapy together. And there is a treatment plan that includes play therapy and then trait therapy that, from my understanding, is for children. And I did not sign or acknowledge the treatment plan because I did not know that my son would be Dr. Kyber with father. I also submitted a text message from Dr. Pyburn to father where it states that my son said something to Dr. Pyburn, and I will just read the text message. It says, A said he was going to tell his mom and show him when you two were playing. I asked why, and he said it makes her happy. He chastised him for lying, and I told him not to tell her that. I said it's okay to lie, but not to restrict what he told his mom. So I believe that giving my son advice and play therapy and gun therapy is in fact therapy to my son. And like I said, it was for the very first time that I found out that my son would be back to Taiwan on October 28, 2019 at this hearing. Otherwise, I would have never found out that he was undergoing treatment with father in collaboration or not. And that is for these reasons, I believe that Dr. Pyburn not only conducted unprofessional behavior, but also violated the legal court ruling in regards to my son's custody. I also want to say that today my son is temporarily with me only. I have full custody of my son, and I also have full legal decision-making authority. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. We may have some questions for you. Can you confirm at the time when Dr. Pfeiffer was senior saying, what was the legal authority at the time for decision making on health care? Was it joint?
At the time, we have joint legal decision making and we have 50-50 parenting time. There's also the decree that specifically says if the decision involves medical or schooling issues, the parties may further elect to seek input from treating physicians or educators. Both parents shall be provided with such input. If they cannot agree, the parents should make unilateral decisions for major decisions.
Thank you. And we've received all material. We've read all material. We ask questions that probably think, oh, we know the answers. But again, we're trying to just make sure we understand and receive the input from those that are participating. Dr. Flowers, any questions?
Well, I believe it has been answered, but I'll ask it anyway. At any point, did Dr. Pyburn advise you that your son was involved in any fashion with services with Dr. Pyburn?
Absolutely not. I found out about my son's involvement with Dr. Piper on October 28, 2019, at the temporary hearing after Dr. Piper testified on behalf of father. That was the first time that I found out about the therapy.
Okay, and as far as you know, was she supposed to be an expert witness in regards to custody issues at the hearing?
Yes. Yes. So father submitted her name as a witness that did on behalf of him.
Okay, I understand that part, that there are times when the court gives an order and then authorizes or orders a licensed individual to provide expert witness testimony, but from what I gather, she testified at the request of your ex-husband.
Correct. And just to clarify, he is not my ex-husband. We just
okay. Sorry. Otherwise,
no worries.
The father of the child, the healthy guy.
Correct.
Okay.
And also to clarify, I was not informed by father either that he was taking my son to therapy.
Okay.
Any further questions?
I have none at this time. Thank you.
RC, when she testified, what basically was the premise of her testimony?
I did submit, you've had an opportunity to review the digital recording, which I submitted to the committee, but she basically indicated that she has seen my son with his father a total of 3 times to therapy, and that she provided my son advice on his behavior. She did admit that she had never asked me for consent on therapy sessions for my son. My attorney asked Dr. Tyburn, and she was aware that the law required consent for both parents before treating any minor, whether it was in collaboration or not with father treatment. She did reinstate that she was treating the father and providing parenting skills for the father and play therapy for father and my son. However, during the entire therapy session, my son was in the room and she did provide advice, feedback, and therapy to my son.
Any further questions, Dr. Davis Wilson? Do you have any questions?
I do not.
All right. RC, thank you very much for your testimony. I'm going to now move to we do have speaker's request for Dr. Byborn and I believe your attorney.
Yes.
If you'd like to come forward, please. Thank you for being with us today. We do appreciate it. If you'd like to please introduce yourself for the record, and if you'd like to make whoever some comments, that would be great.
Dr. Connie Piper, Chair Shree, members of the board, Flynn Carey, counsel for Dr. Piper. I'll make a brief statement. This is a case in which Dr. Piper fully documented her role, who the client was. She documented that she confirmed with father who was being treated. From the moment of the first intake in late July, Dr. Pyburn documented on her intake note that she only treats first responders. She uses the term LEOs, which is law enforcement officers. It's an abbreviation that's used for law enforcement. She specifically wrote, no children. And it's significant because at the time in July, there was no family dispute that Dr. Pyburn was anywhere near. So there would be no reason for her to document she only sees Leos and no children, other than that's her practice. She was clearly identifying that. In addition, the informed consent form, father checked, check here if you are obtaining services for yourself. The box under it is check here if you're obtaining services for your minor child. This was very clear that father was seeking services for himself. There's a policies form. Some practitioners, as you know, will bifurcate their office policies, how to get records, things like that. She does that. And in the policy forms, she specifically wrote above the signature line, asterisk, father agreed he was the client. Child can attend as collateral 1 to 3 times to inform therapists of dad's parenting skills. This is, again, before any conflict arose between the complainant, between the court. She was already documenting the role of this child and the limited role of this child. The first session, she again, on 725, clarifies, could only be his therapist, not child's. If you look at the notes for 8-8, it clearly indicates that what she was doing is observing. She was not the one making the swivels. She was not the one making the handshakes. Those activities were with father and son. The progress notes from 8-16, same thing. The therapy component of it occurred once the child left the room. And in addition, you can know that she's documenting consistently because the next time another person shows up in therapy as a collateral, it's not the child, it's a different person. She documents again consistently here. Mother's primary claim here is that child is receiving treatment. However, every document before this conflict arose clearly show who the client was. The identified patient, the identified client was father. Now there's this claim that mother was surprised. This is the first time she heard about this at the court date. Not accurate. Ms. Pontrelli, her counsel, had in hand the notes. She had documents in hand and she used them to cross-examine Dr. Piper. In family court cases, even in temporary orders hearings, it is customary that there is an exchange of discovery. We know that mom didn't subpoena the records. We know that mom didn't do any kind of release. And so the only way those records could have made them over to Ms. Pontrelli was if they were given to her through the discovery process. And Ms. Pontrelli, as her cross-examination demonstrated, she had reviewed those records. So the idea that they are somehow flabbergasted or surprised the first time at this family court hearing just simply not accurate. In addition, we note that there's no statutory or regulatory guidance about needing both parents to consent to a child being a collateral. The guidance is limited, and a practitioner maintains the discretion to determine if other people will be present, not treated, but be present. We pulled in some guidance from other jurisdictions, and the reason we have that guidance at our fingertips is this happened. We do this case all the time. California is our closest. The California LMFT board is the closest we have for guidance. The staff attorneys for CAFT have written articles about the discretion that's vested in the practitioner and the fact that the collateral is not a patient. Finally, courts have determined in cases that are alleged to be even more egregious, cases in which a parent takes a child to a practitioner who actually treats the child. In those cases, there was a case in Maine where the court said if the code does not provide guidance, if there is not actual statutory guidance, a board should not sanction the person for treating a child with only one parent's consent. And the reason for that is because a practitioner must be able to go to a statute or a law or an ethical code and very clearly understand what their obligations are. In the Maine case, the court reversed the board and said, yes, there's only consent for the child by one parent. However, the statute and the guidance does not specifically indicate that you need both. This is a case that's even further removed because the child is serving in a collateral role. As for this idea of this question about this email, there's a HIPAA violation. It's not a text message, it's an email. And we can know it's an email because it has a header on it. It uses a document code. We've provided you the actual email. What happened is dad, and I've had this with clients all the time, they screen capture on their phone a piece of evidence, they shoot it over to their attorney, and the attorney accepts it. Generally, it's a better practice to get the full email with a nice header so you know what you're looking at. It didn't happen here, and so we've gone down this rabbit hole of HIPAA issues. It's a secured email. It has a document code at the top. There's not a HIPAA issue here. I also think that there's a significant amount of parsing of language here. We have attempted to clarify and demonstrate exactly what was being communicated, but it's father who chastised the child. It's father who told the child not to lie. It's Dr. Piper who later pulled the father aside and attempted to guide the father in how he can do that in a more productive way. Dr. Pyrum did not provide this child therapy. He was present for a very limited period of time, and from day one, there is consistent documentation of this child's role. And so we would ask that this, the board or the committee, to conclude that this is not a complaint that has merit and dismiss it.
Thank you for your comments. Are there questions from the board?
Madam Chair, I have a question. I think maybe more for the licensee, but I'm not clear if
yes, that's right.
Yep, maybe the attorney answers for and however.
No, she can answer the question.
And we certainly, we would never object to any questions asked of Dr. Pyburn. I'm here if there's a legal issue, but certainly we would not object to that.
Thank you, Dr. Sorry.
Okay. A lot of the questions I'm going to ask are going to be basic, you know, but I'll ask them and just for your input. How was AF referred to you?
Through his insurance company and the Chandler Police Department.
Okay. And what services were requested?
Initially, he requested counseling for relationship issues.
Okay. What was your role or responsibility to court, to the court? Because I know frequently, usually when we're doing like individual counseling, we don't end up in court testifying.
Correct.
There are times when we are designated or called by an attorney as an expert witness. Well, of course, the court has to decide if they accept this as an expert witness. But how did that happen?
The father requested my presence when I indicated that I did not want to attend court. He indicated that I could be subpoenaed, so I complied without a subpoena. The initial request was to document the diagnosis code that we had agreed upon in our beginning of treatment planning. And he was adamant that he wanted to make sure that I had documented a specific code versus a different code.
Just to confirm that regarding the father?
Regarding the father, correct.
And when you said relationship issues with whom?
He indicated it initially. He indicated the relationship issues with multiple people, including his child, his current living girlfriend, who he sometimes refers to as his wife, and some coworkers. There were several indications that he was struggling. During the intake session, I was very clear that I only see police officers. He did ask me both on the phone and during the intake session about seeing his child, and both times I gave him a list of three people that he could contact or visit for referrals for child therapy. And we were focusing specifically on father's behavior and father's adjustment to different life circumstances.
Did the court ask you about custody and visitation issues?
No.
And Dr. Flowers, this is Flynn Carey, counsel. We did provide a transcript, and my view, and I don't want to talk out of turn, but my view is that she was called as what we call a recipient witness. Is she actually had information from observations. I did not get the impression from the questions asked, even by Ms. Pontrelli, that anyone was asking her to render an expert opinion. This is, you know, I think this is really kind of more akin to calling an eyewitness, and that seemed to be the tone throughout. I know there was a little bit of a rabbit hole with Ms. Pontrelli about HIPAA and about the consent issues, but overall, based upon the way that examination was conducted, I read it as her being just a recipient witness, someone who had information as a product of observation.
Okay. And looking at the transcript recorded on the 20th of October, their quotation, and it says, well, first let me clarify that the father came to me for parenting support. And so I talked to him about his parenting. He brought his child into the session so that I could witness it firsthand and see what their interaction was like. My understanding is typically with a collateral, you call the individual in or to get input from the person, you know, opinions, observation from the collateral person. I think that the child was like 6 years old and mine pretty young.
I'm sorry, Dr. Pleasant, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Okay. He's a young child, so I don't know that you would call him in and say, please tell me about your dad. Was it like you just wanted to observe to get information from the son? Is that kind of how it was being done?
Yes. So in the court transcript, it says three times. I have in my records document two times. The first time I met with the father for approximately an hour. And at the end of the session, the child was waiting in the waiting room, and I introduced myself as Miss Connie. And I introduced my therapy dog, and the therapy dog shook his hand. So that was the entirety of one of those sessions. I spent the entire time talking to Dad about his concerns, which included his relationship with his child and his parenting. At that point, during that initial session, I determined that it would be helpful for me to see firsthand what Dad was talking about, because Dad had conflicting information about his interactions with other people, including his son. And so on the second session, the father brought the child in for approximately 15 minutes. I actually used a timer, and so when the timer went off, I asked of the room, which included the parent and the child, to clean up, and then the child was dismissed to the waiting room, and I spoke with the father about my observations and what I considered his concerns, what I saw as concerns. So I was using a theraplay modality as far as observation. So theoretically, I was looking at how father engaged with the child, how he challenged the child, what kind of structure there were. Those words were the things that I was using, which in my mind made it play therapy because I was using that construct. But the child was only in the room for 15 minutes for me to observe father's interaction and how father behaved. And
And Dr. Flowers, I would recognize that in page 7 of the transcript, when Ms. Pontrelli, the complainant's attorney, asked about play therapy, she very specifically said, I did play therapy with the father. And so I think that even at that point, prior to there being a complaint, I think she was very articulate in the fact that she was, as she had said here, she was using a play therapy modality. I would also recognize that under Principle E of the APA Code, regarding the respect for rights and dignity, there's discussion about the fact that you have to make adjustments or respect when there is a difference with individuals due to age, is one example. And so I would ask the committee to consider, if you have a collateral in who is not of an age where they may be sufficiently articulate, then putting them in more of an observation, being in more of an observational role and watching organically how a parent interacts with his child for the purpose of giving that parent therapy, I think would be within that principle and would actually show a deference to Principle E under the APA Code.
Yeah, I'm wondering as well, did you meet with the child to tell him the reason that she was called in?
The very first time I met him, when I introduced him, I introduced myself as Miss Connie. I introduced Smudge as my dog, and I indicated that the dog likes to play. I did tell the child that I would be helping Dad learn to play better. And other than that, there was no introduction as far as the child himself. When the child came into the room, the follow-up was, I'm going to watch how Dad plays and then tell Dad how to do it better. And so after the child left the room, then it was, you know, I'm going to talk to Dad to teach him how to do things better.
Okay, I guess you were thinking that his developmental label or level, that would be what he could grasp rather than something more global.
Well, I'm not exactly sure how old he is because it was all a discussion with father. He's probably close to 8, maybe 6, but developmentally he talks, you know, he talked and interacted with Dad fairly well, but I did not engage in a conversation to kind of determine developmentally if he was capable of more. That was never really my intent. The intent was to actually watch father's parenting and to watch kind of their interaction to see if father was, again, using my therapeutic lens of therapy, whether father was establishing, you know, challenge for the child. If he was, you know, giving the child structure, if, you know, things were within the play, the way the father was behaving, if there were things that could be corrected.
Okay, looking at the progress notes for the 8th of August and the 16th of August, it does indicate, you know, play therapy, and then one of them talks about sense trait therapy as a therapeutic modality. As I think we stated, those are typically used for the children rather than, I don't think you got the father working on the fan tray. But was that basically done so the child may engage and could observe the father's response? Is that kind of the, because I don't think it was therapy, it wasn't the play therapy in the sense, right? I don't think it was designed specifically for the father.
Well,
you follow my reasoning on this.
Right. Well, let me look at my notes for a second. I never actually used Santray with them. I do actually do Santray with adults. So,
okay. It can be done then.
Yes, Santray is actually a was actually developed initially by Young, and it was initially developed for adults. And so I have about 120 continuing education hours with Teresa Kessley out of New Mexico, who uses sand tray for all ages. And she does extensive work with adults and grief with sand tray. And so I do use sand tray with adults as well as children. In this particular case, we never had an opportunity to use it because the number of sessions to date has been limited.
Okay, yeah, looking more closely, I see just the point therapy here. And then on the 8th, it lists the client as being AF as well as the son.
Yes.
So that gets kind of confusing because, I guess strictly speaking, the son was not a client.
And,
And I would direct Dr. Flowers, you to October 23rd of 19. I think this is a designation situation where she indicates client, then she says plus person. And I don't believe it's for the purpose of treatment. That way in which to designate the collateral was used consistently with the wife as well, or the live-in significant other. And so I think this is that's regarding the documentation. I think the plus indicates that it's another person who's present in the room, and that was adopted similarly when the young lady that joined client was present in the room.
Okay, I'm wondering, there was some indication, I believe, on case that you reviewed a treatment plan, but I read elsewhere that there wasn't one done yet. So I was confused by that.
So he started a treatment plan. Basically, we were those first few sessions with really any client are evaluation sessions to determine what the client needs. So sometimes during the intake session, the needs are very clear, and a treatment plan can be written at the end of the intake, but typically my treatment plans are written on the second or third session so that the client also has time to consider what they want their goals to be. I'm trying to do a collaborative approach with treatment goals, and through my monitoring we worked very extensively on making sure that the treatment goals were measurable. And so having the client participate in what they want the goals to be, being very clear about who the client is, what my role is, and what type of therapy we're going to engage in. So we began those discussions at the beginning, but then the treatment plan itself was not entirely finished until October 23rd. We had started it. We had signed a partial plan on the 16th, and then we continued to develop it and finished it on the 23rd.
And I would note, Dr. Flowers, as well, that prior to a complaint being lodged against Dr. Pyburn, on the 18th, when she was asked for documentation by clients, by father, she actually made a note that the treatment plan was not yet completed. So again, we have another example of which, prior to any Ms. Pyburn being in any licensing danger, she again is still accurately documenting the state of affairs. And in this case, on the 18th, prior to completion of the plan, she indicated had not completed treatment plan. And so I think that that's internally consistent again, and it goes along with some of the examples that we've provided since July, in which every instance in which she touches this case, she clarifies her role and clarifies where the case is currently standing. And so I understand your question. I just want to make sure it's clear that she designated it in her notes itself that the treatment plan was still a work in progress, which was ultimately completed about a week later.
Okay, yeah, because it was, I think you clarified it, but in that one specific note, it was unclear of, about reviewing a treatment plan. I guess basically it was being developed rather than reviewed.
And I think that's a product of, I think what Dr. Pyburn said, I think it's consistent, is the fact that Father did come in with something of a shotgun approach of issues that he wanted addressed, ranging from intrapersonal at work to live-in significant other to how he interacted with his child. I mean, those are the things that Dr. Pyburn identified in one of her responses, I think, to Chair Shree or to you. And so I think that also lends itself to a treatment plan that's, completed a session or two in, compared to someone who shows up and says they have PTSD, and that may be more appropriately diagnosed and begin a treatment plan at a first meeting. I don't think he provided as concise of an explanation, and so I think that what you're seeing is Dr. Piper at work attempting to identify the areas in which she'll be providing treatment services.
Okay, I'm wondering as well if there was a formal intake evaluation. I think we can see one, you know, that would typically include their history, a DSM-5 diagnosis, and that kind of thing. I didn't see that. Was that done?
So it was done over the multiple sessions. The DSM-5 diagnosis is on the treatment plan. The intake session was on July 25th, where I initially started interviewing the father and asking him pertinent questions. The questions came up through the sessions. You know, it's a multiple session kind of evaluation at the beginning to determine what did I see as his DSM-5 diagnosis, as well as what specific goals are we wanting to address.
Okay, because looking at the paperwork, at one point I saw it just said diagnosis was adjustment.
Correct.
And I'm guessing that you meant adjustment disorder, but it doesn't really say that.
We don't want to say anything. And Dr. Flowers, we don't want to talk too specifically about the diagnosis. So I think the question is, if I can rephrase it, is the diagnosis is very narrow and maybe doesn't fit a specific one. I mean, it's,
do we need a session or?
If you feel that.
If you feel this is important, we need to go into exec session. So it's up to you, Dr. Clark. I'd leave it up to you as far as if you feel you want to do that.
I don't think that's needed.
Okay.
And I would note, and I'm the one in the room here without the credentials that many of you have, but I would note that at times there is support for the idea that adjustment can be diagnosed a little more readily. That certain diagnoses of which we are speaking can be diagnosed more readily, and then other diagnoses sometimes will follow, or there will need to be an adjustment to the DSM diagnoses. And so it's not uncommon that the diagnosis of which we're not speaking sometimes does show up in initial treatment because it is more readily able to be identified under the DSM-5 criteria. It's, you know, just like anything, diagnoses shift. This is not this case, but for instance, you know, with the alcohol, it falls into remission, it falls into levels of mild or more severe. And so I think it is an organic process, and I think that by providing an initial diagnosis based upon the information that she was provided, that's a reasonable standard, that meets the standard of care, even if later down the road when she gets more information, either directly or from collaterals, she adjusts those diagnoses. So and I think that would be consistent with the ethical requirements, which is not going outside of competence, which means not going and making diagnoses that are not informed by the evidence in front of the person. And so I think it's pretty apparent that based on the limited contact she had had at the time of making the diagnosis, that it would be consistent with what she saw, and it would not be unreasonable for someone to reach that diagnosis at the time that she did with this individual. Based on a few visits, I think that the standard of care does allow that diagnosis. There are other diagnoses that obviously you would spend more time. There are certain ones, certainly, that you'd be using inventories and statistical or objective testing before you would feel comfortable. For instance, with alcohol, you'd use a MAST or a SASE or other testing so that you can effectively provide an appropriate DSM-5 diagnosis. The one diagnosis of which we're speaking, it fits into a little bit more of a box where you can identify it and at least code it pretty early on in treatment. And I think if we were to develop that into actual testimony with an expert, I think you would have fairly consistent agreement that that's a reasonable diagnosis early in a treatment setting.
Thank you. Dr. Flowers?
Okay, one other question here. Within the testimony, I won't say what diagnosis it was, but there was a statement that the father did not have a certain diagnosis. But I didn't really see within the documentation that those kind of symptoms had been asked or discussed.
So those symptoms were discussed in more detail on October 23rd. His father was asking me to appear in court. So I did ask him more specific questions on the 23rd to rule out or rule in those criteria.
Okay, I'm looking at, it's just kind of a note for that date, and I, and that looks like the date that also the wife was present. But I don't really see specifically, you know, the documentation doesn't show that.
Okay,
it's just kind of like the rest of your recollection kind of thing that it was done?
No, that specific diagnosis, there is the criteria A is met in there with the event. And then,
okay.
And the event, Dr. Flowers would be, I think, the second line of handwritten text on the S and soap note. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Yes, so Dr. Flowers, the second line is the one she's referring to at that event, and at that part.
So that's criteria A, and then I ask about the other criteria, so you can see that his responses.
Okay. It's just that is helpful.
Yes.
Yeah, and that would refer, Dr. Flowers, the three lines under the what we designated as the event, those three lines would be consistent with the diagnosis for the criteria, to meet the criteria under DSM-5.
Okay. All right, I appreciate your input, and those are all the questions I have at this time.
I just have one. What was your understanding as to why you were being asked to attend the hearing?
My understanding was that the father wanted me to specify the diagnosis that I had given him on the treatment plan and not a secondary diagnosis. In our conversations, he was very concerned about being painted in court as having a specific diagnosis.
And is it fair to say that the diagnoses that you did provide ultimately were informed by your decisions and by the evidence that was before you?
Yes.
And you didn't put any type of diagnosis that was not accurate or not supported by the evidence that you deserved?
That's correct.
A couple questions. On your, a new client information form, and it's on page 54 for on this, under, I think it's like the second page, under Roman 045, it says, please briefly describe why you are choosing to enter treatment at this time, and it's answered father/son/relationships/family. So it was a relation specifically with the son and the family, correct?
Well, the family including his girlfriend, yes.
Okay. And then further...
And relationships, he said, you know, he was having issues with relationships besides family.
All right, then further down the very end where you sign it, the very last page of it, which is 61 online, I don't know where it is on yours. There's handwritten in an asterisk that says, father agreed he was client, child can attend as collateral 1 to 3 times to something, therapist, some of dad's parenting skills.
To inform therapist.
Thank you. Who wrote that?
I did.
And did he didn't initial it or acknowledge it?
He signed it. I wrote it before he signed it.
You wrote it before he signed it.
So basically, I had them sign through the informed consent, which is where Dad marked that he was the client. So they fill that out in the first few pages, and then I take it back into the room. And then we review in person, in the treatment, the rest of my paperwork, so that I can answer questions, they initial it as we go through it.
All right, because this is an initial, so it's not, so usually when you handwrite something and you initial it, so it can be like afterwards, so you're saying it was written before?
It was written before Dad signed the document.
Can you tell me the difference between, and just to be clear, I represent the general public, I'm not a psychologist. So can you tell me what your understanding is, the difference between, if I were to come in with my child and say, hey, we got a relationship issue, I'm trying to be a better parent, we're trying to, when is it that child's part of the therapy, and that child would then be collateral? Because this, so how does that, or how do you define, where's the line there? So in what, and it's a young child, it's, you know, I say, you know, a 6, 8-year-old, where, how do I differentiate when that person is part of the therapy, part of it, and when it's not?
So I have a very clear in my mind if the perceived problem is the relationship between the two, so the problem is both the parent and the child, then they may need family therapy because both people have a problem. In this case, my perception was that the problem was with the parent and that the child was a he was in the system, but he wasn't the actual problem. That what I was looking at was Dad's parenting skills. And parenting itself is different than my interaction between two people. So parenting is one aspect of a family dynamic. What skills does the parent have? How can they explain their child's behavior? How they perceive what's going on with their child, things like that. Dad presented this child as having no problems whatsoever. And so his perception, which is all that I'm going on an initial meeting, is that this child is quasi-perfect and that the child doesn't need anything. And so from that perspective, then I'm going, okay, if the child doesn't have a problem, then the dad must have the problem. And so looking to see then from the collateral perspective, what's Dad doing that isn't working right? So I was listening to Dad and it wasn't clicking, it wasn't making sense. That he's telling me that he has this wonderful relationship with his child and that his child's perfect, but on out the other side saying, I need some help because things aren't going well. Well, what's not going well? He had a hard time describing that. And he couldn't tell me what he perceived his problem to be. So from that perspective, I'm then taking it as Dad isn't communicating to me effectively what the issue is. He's not seeing any problems with the child. He's not describing the child as having any type of mental health issues. But Dad is becoming agitated and anxious as we're talking. So I'm seeing some symptoms in Dad that suggest Dad needs more confidence in his parenting skills. Now, the skills may be adequate. I don't know that yet, because I've only just talked to Dad, but I see in Dad that he's needing some type of support for at least his self-esteem as a parent. So at that point, I'm choosing in my decision tree to say, if I think this is a family situation, I'm going to refer them to someone else because I'm not doing them therapy. If it's a child issue, I'm referring them to child therapists, which I did several times because it was unclear if the child actually had some issues. So when I then decided to allow the child to come in as a collateral, it was specifically for the purpose to inform me what's going on with dad. Why is dad getting anxious when he talks about parenting? Why is dad struggling with playing with his own child? So I'm still looking only at dad, what's going on with dad. So the child's behavior, what the child says, does, I'm not looking at that from a point of view that there's something that I need to diagnose with the child. I'm looking at the child only as an instrument to an evaluation on dad's behavior. And to me, a collateral is really when I bring someone else in to inform me about my client's behavior. So with an adult, I may bring their spouse in and ask them questions. I may also bring the spouse in and watch that how they interact with each other, that, you know, they sit too close or they won't touch each other or won't make eye contact. So it's observation, it's nonverbal, not just verbal. So in this case, I was looking at dad's nonverbal and verbal behavior when the child was present. What was making him anxious about the situation?
Right, thanks. Did you, was the girlfriend ever come as
a collateral? She came in once as a collateral as well. And just also to clarify about that, I am consulting with a couple of psychologists on a regular basis. And after she came in on that day, I had consulted with Dr. Lawrence, and I now have a collateral form for people to sign to make very clear their collateral versus, you know, a handwritten thing on my, you know, intake. I just wanted to make it very clear the child was a collateral, but at that point I didn't have a form, which I do now, that is filled out to, you know, further specify with a separate signature that this person is a collateral.
Okay.
And I would note the standard of care doesn't require a collateral form, but that's essentially the direction that legal advice is going at this point on informing people as the issues arise to develop that form. But right now, there's not a, when you go through the regulations either for this board or BBHE, that's not one of the contemplated required forms at this time.
But if I could practice sometimes have that.
It's evolving.
Yeah,
so.
It's evolving. Just to clarify, I wanted to go back to that handwritten note you had put in. Father agreed he was client, child can attend. He said his father agreed he was client. Was that so? It was kind of past tense. Was that talked about? Then you wrote it. Then you signed it.
Yes.
How did that?
So we were discussing the form as we were going through. So for example, on my form, there's a paragraph about the dog. So we discussed the dog. The dog's present. You meet the dog, is the dog okay with you? Some people, I've had people allergic to the dog, so then we, you know, remove the dog from those sessions.
But he,
so,
I guess just
so, through the entire form,
okay,
we're discussing what my role is, what my, you know, limitations and boundaries are, and then he initials each box, and then at the very end, then he signs that this is the, you know, totality of what we've discussed.
And that would be consistent, Chair Shreve, with the note on 722 when he made his intake call to Dr. Pyburn, in which she did note that she gave him notice that she was only seeing Leos and trauma and no children. So presumably that agreement was obtained on the 22nd prior to him even coming into the office.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other questions? All right, thank you. I appreciate you being here. I know this is stressful for everybody. We are now going to go into deliberations. Please note that deliberations is a time for committee members to deliberate amongst each other. Interruptions from the complainant, licensee, attorneys.
Dr. Flowers, you're the lead. Would you like to start the deliberations?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. This is a case that there, I think, are a lot of gray areas about when family therapy starts and who's involved and that kind of thing. And looking at all that occurred, it appears to me that the father's agenda may have been to arrange for Dr. Pyburn to go to court and testify about his parenting skills and that kind of thing, and also getting what he thought would be a better custodial decision-making role from that. And so it's unfortunate that occurred, because it wasn't really designed as part of the plan. Due to the way that the notes are done, I'm not totally clear. It makes it apparent that only the father was the client. And again, traditionally, when people come in as a collateral, they answer questions rather than being observed in interaction. So, you know, and then that kind of, again, looks like it goes toward a different form of therapy rather than individual. So those, I think, are the concerns. And indeed, I believe only one parent has to agree to somebody participating in therapy, their child. But when there is a litigious thing going on, it's very prudent that that be looked into by the therapist to see who's supposed to make decisions and that kind of thing to very sensitive. Those are my key observations on this case. I invite the opinions of the other two committee members.
Thank you, Dr. Flowers. And just if you're on the phone and you're not Dr. Flowers, if you could please put your phone on mute, I would appreciate it. We're getting some feedback on the phone line. Dr. Gase Wilson, do you want to go first on you? Thank you. I guess I look at my two colleagues here, you know, the bigger issue is informed consent. They had a joint parenting agreement, which in my understanding, both parents have to agree or be informed of any medical services. And in this situation, only father did. There's just this fine, you know, this line of when is it counseling and when is it observing, and then you get into the whole where you're making recommendations to the court based on this child that you were seeing, whether they weren't a client or not. So I have some concerns. I know it's written in here that the child's not the client, but I'm not clear if that would be perceived as that or not. Any thoughts on Dr. Davis Wilson?
Yeah, I would agree. I think I second Dr. Flowers' concern that it appears that Deb's interpretation of the doctor's role may be different than what the doctor's role was interpreted as. It does appear that Dad did have some email correspondence that would be one to assume that he was looking for information that would assist him in custodial arrangements with his child. I also agree, as far as the documentation, the treatment plan, specifically the one that outlines the play therapy and what we talked about, it's not clear on that document who the client is, and I do think that can be problematic and misleading, especially if one party or both parties are confused with the role of what the doctor is in place for.
I have concerns about informed consent, so that would be the ethical violation of informed consent, which is 3.10. I kind of feel like that is where I feel like there might have been a violation. Any thoughts or comments, Dr. Flowers, your thoughts?
Yeah,
Yes, I agree that that is an area of concern. And I'd like to make a motion on the complaint. I would like to make a motion that the complaint be referred to the full board for initial review for possible violations of ARS 32-2061-16 on professional conduct. The H, failing or refusing to retain adequate business, financial, or professional records pertaining to the psychological services provided to a client or patient. O, providing services that are unnecessary or unsafe or otherwise engaging in activities as a psychologist that are unprofessional by current standards of practice. And then DD, violating an ethical standard adopted by the board, ethical principles of psychologists and code of conduct 3.10, informed consent. And that would be under A, when psychologists conduct research or provide assessment, therapy, counseling, or consulting services in person or electronically or other forms, they obtain the informed consent of the individuals using language that's reasonably understandable to that person or persons, except when conducting such activities without consent is mandated by law or government regulation.
So if I understand it, it was ARS 32-2061-16H?
I said H, O, and then DD.
Right, and DD 3.10, confirm consent. Okay, so we have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. You'll be contacted by the office in regards to our next steps. I'd like to thank both parties for being with us today, and you'll be notified of when this will go into the full board.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next case is case number 2014, Kishana Sade, and I am the lead of this case. I'm going to provide a brief summary. This complaint stems from a custody proceeding in January 13, 2019. The court appointed Dr. Malin Sayil as the therapeutic interventionist, and Dr. Sade was working in conjunction with Dr. Malin Sayil. Dr. Sade began providing therapy to the daughter on March 29, 2019. The daughter was providing services March 2019. On January, several months later, dad was awarded sole legal decision-making authority with the daughter. Prior to that, when the therapy started, it was joint. On September 2019, the board office received the mother's complaint, which was subsequently sent to three board members for review. Two of the reviewers recommended opening a claim based on ARS 32-2061-16E, Girls Negligence and Practice Psychologist. 16O, providing services that are unnecessary and unsafe for others, otherwise engaging in activities as a psychologist and that are unprofessional. And third, B, abandoning and neglecting client patient in need of immediate care. The allegations, mom submitted the allegations, the complaint. According to mom, Dr. Sadiq vocalized threats to daughter on several occasions regarding being sent away to boarding school, foster care, or mental hospital or inpatient treatment if daughter did not spend time with father. Doctor blamed father for doctor blamed mother for the daughter's some health conditions, and Dr. Sadiq planned on accompanying daughter on a shopping trip to buy new furniture with dad to buy daughter some bedroom furniture, that the doctor had offered to accompany the daughter on a visit to the doctor's office along with daughter. that the doctor offered to assist daughter with medication from her parents once daughter turned 16, that the doctor invited the daughter to attend a teen group, which was led by a Coach Ben Miller. Coach Ben Miller gives dog massages during this session. Mom later learned that the coach was the doctor's then boyfriend. Coach Miller has continued the group, and Dr. Sade told daughter they broke up and he left the group to become a massage therapist. Doctor accompanied the, that due to the doctor, the daughter was forced to change schools due to doctor's recommendation. That the doctor informed dad that he'd been reported to the Adult Protective Services by the mom's therapist, and that the doctor failed to share all details and facts to and facts with other providers and school therapists, which hindered the daughter's care. The licensee responded. The doctor specializes in treatments of clients who range in age from 2 to 18. She provides therapy in both school system and in her private practice. Dr. Sade works in conjunction with Dr. Carol Melisio, with whom she shares an office, and helps provide court order services to family. Dr. Melisio was a court-appointed therapeutic interventionalist to this situation and sought Dr. Sade's assistance. Dr. Sade recommended to Dr. Melisio that the county court that there should be no attempts at unification between daughter and dad until dad had was in a mental state, better mental state. And they, based on the progress that the daughter had received, Dr. Melon Sayel determined it would be appropriate to basically initiate reunification between daughter and father. There were concerns. The doctor had concerns regarding some what they felt potential issues with the mother that was causing potentially some of the daughter's health issues. There was a letter from a what's the company's name? From a health facility where the daughter was the diagram where the daughter was went for services. The daughter taken out of that, and that health facility wrote a letter stating they had concerns with Dr. Sade's treatment of that daughter. And that summarizes my my notes on the case. Is the complainant here?
Yes.
I believe, yes. Could you come forward, please? Thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
If you'd like to, and if you'd like to introduce yourself, just using your initials.
Yes, my MP.
MP. And if you would like to provide a summary or a brief comments.
I guess the summary would be really long. You covered it. It's very complicated.
Very complicated.
It is mind-blowing. As far as I'm concerned, but I'm here for my daughter.
You know, this is very difficult. Take a breath.
My daughter, RP, who I think has suffered and is still currently suffering severe emotional and mental issues due to the treatment of both Dr. Sade and Dr. Mellon. And I'm here today to represent her because she has not had a voice in this, or she's had a voice and she hasn't been heard. I do want to make a point to the board that the judge, the family judge presiding over this case, did remove Dr. Mellon for cause and did order Dr. Sade's cease treatment for my daughter. Thank goodness the court recognized that there was some gross negligence and some huge red flags taking place, and there's a new team that's been appointed. But the damage that my daughter has gone through because of this will last a lifetime. She has a new team, and I hope
hoping that they are successful, but there is gross negligence and unethical.
All right. Do we have some questions for you? Some of the concerns you had talked about that the doctor told you that she would be accompanying your daughter to a trip to the doctor's. I guess it was a female type doctor, you know, type issue. Can you explain that situation?
Yes. So when my daughter left for Paradigm, she was left for 6 weeks. She was pulled against medical advice. Prior to her leaving, dad had been the issue. And while she was there, the carpet got pulled out between underneath both of us, and I was not a focus. So I lost originally rights, and then they were granted back. So at the time, I had equal decision-making without having final say. It was brought to my attention, and there was an appointment that I had actually made for my daughter. She was at starter period and was having cramps, and she actually had a 28-day period while she was at Paradigm Malibu. The appointment was made by me for a follow-up. She'd been on birth control pills. It was to see Dr. Beaumont, Dr. B, who she has seen for many years, and it was just a checkup to go in with her. And I got an email from Dr. Sade stating that she was going to be attending the appointment with RP, and I was shocked and taken back, and I did respond both myself and my lawyer stating that I thought that that was a completely unethical and unnecessary thing for that to happen. My daughter feels very comfortable with Dr. B, and I can't imagine that she would have actually asked for Dr. Sade to accompany her to that. My husband was accompanying her. I feel like there was definitely some inappropriate relationship taking place there.
And you also had mentioned a shopping situation.
Yes, yeah, so she was, they were trying to reunify my husband and my daughter. My daughter was afraid to have a long time with her father due to abuse throughout her life, and a more recent one where he was pled guilty to disorderly conduct. And she was the victim and the witness in that earlier. So they were trying to get her more ease. She was trying to cooperate. She did not want to live with her father. She did not want alone time. And these were ways of trying to get her excited about it. And she would come home and tell me that she felt like she'd been bribed to like a child, like a little kid, being bribed with things in the home. And Dr. Sade did accompany them on shopping trips.
And there was also the Coach Miller, the issue you that was brought up. There was a Coach Miller was a I guess, assistant to the doctor.
It's
in regards to, but did you know their relationship at the time?
I did not know their relationship. It is in her service contract. She mentions him as being somebody that she brings in to help with teenagers. It was sold to me, and I think to my husband also, as you know, he's a big man. My husband's a big man, and my daughter is afraid of large men and strong-voiced men. And I liked Coach Ben, who's very nice. They did tell me that there was a massage taking place afterwards, and I agreed. I appreciated them informing me of that. I did not know it was her boyfriend until she had already broken up and Reese mentioned it to me.
And so your daughter learned of it?
Yes, she did.
And told that to you?
Yes.
And how did she learn of it?
She was, I'm assuming, told in session by Dr. Sade in conversation. I know she talked about her breaking up with her boyfriend. She also discussed, Reese would tell me about dates that she had or people she had met online.
In regards to your daughter's health, there was comments regarding some a lot of doctor visits or whatnot. Has she received medical care she's needed?
She has had, yes. So she has had anxiety most of her life.
We don't want to talk about diagnosis. And I'm trying to, in a general sense,
Yes.
And I guess I'm looking more at the physical aspects. There was, you know, discussion about her physical, you know, health.
Yes. So during different times in her life, she's had weight loss. But she was being seen by a GI at Phoenix Children since she was 5 years old. She has been under his care. He is the head of the GI department at Phoenix Children's.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Any other questions? Dr. Flowers?
Yes, I'm wondering in regards to the individual who provided maybe massages wasn't the only thing. Was there some indication that he was a therapist or credentialed, or how was that explained? Because I believe you did pay fees for the service, whatever it was.
I believe there was a fee paid. My husband, I could be mistaken, I thought it was $50. I don't think that there was anything upfront other than in the service contract, which I believe on my second complaint that I just filed Tuesday that I sent in, that service contract was in there and he is mentioned, but it doesn't talk about him being a massage therapist or anything like that. She just calls him Coach Ben.
Okay. Okay, but that was considered part of the therapeutic plan, was to have some kind of interaction with him.
In the service contract, it's generic, so it wasn't specifically, I don't believe, pertaining to Reese. It was to anyone that she was seeing. There is, I believe, a statement about Coach Ben Miller being there, yes, but I don't think it talks about massages.
Okay. All right, then. I also saw there was a letter sent giving really very specific recommendations about education and classes and so forth. Were you concerned about that?
Yes, so there was a letter that was sent, and there was more than one. I'm not sure if it was the letter that I sent that you're speaking of, that I sent to Dr.
If I interrupt you, Dr. Flowers, could you specifically, whose letter it got addressed to, and their date?
Oh, okay.
Just so we're all on the same page here.
Okay. There's one, for the board members, the pages 26 and 27 on the 16th of May. Let me pull it up here, see if I get the right one.
Oh, it looks like an email? Yes.
Yeah, there was...
It's a letter addressed to, is the email from the doctor to Troy and Monica, PM?
Yes. Where it gives me specific, I'm not sure if that's, I'm sorry, that's not the complainant.
Was it the letter's dated May 16th?
Yes.
Is it an email?
Yes, it's. Yeah, it said it.
Yes.
But it's 2RP.
Yes, and M.
Okay, and you know, it goes into great detail talking about educational things and we need very specific recommendations within her education and even leaving arrangements, that kind of thing. And I'm just wondering if that was a concern.
Yes, so it began in when she started seeing her, I think probably in April, Dr. Sinde had suggested trying public school. She was attending a charter school at the time and had been attending since sixth grade. and Dr. Sade wanted her to tour a public school, which I was completely fine with. I know Reese was, I'm sorry, Arlie was fine with that also. But neither one of us thought that it was going to happen so quickly. We wanted to have the opportunity to tour the school, and Dr. Sade was a part of that. And then within a matter of weeks, that changed without RP or myself knowing. And there was planning taking place between my husband and both the doctors to move her to the school of their choice. And my concern was that it was never really given us a choice. It was all of a sudden, yes, we'll do a school tour next fall and maybe consider doing it. All of a sudden, she was being pulled and put into a new school. At the same time, she was at Paradigm, and at the same time, my rights were being pulled from me. So everything happened very, very quickly.
So that was like another kind of unexpected intervention or recommendation, you might say?
Yes, it was. Yes.
Okay. So that was what I was referring to. Okay, thank you.
Who currently has custody and decision making?
My husband has full custody and decision making. We both have joint legal decision making. Yes, final say. It's temporary.
Okay. All right. Dr. Davis Golson?
I don't have any questions.
Okay. All right. Those are all the questions we have right now. We appreciate you being here. We know this is a stressful situation.
Yes.
Would you like to take a seat? I have a request to speak. Dr. Sade, I'd like to come forward, and I believe also your attorney. Thank you for being here. I know this is stressful. If you'd like to introduce yourself, you and your representative, and then I take a minute, get settled in, and then if you'd like to provide a statement, a brief summary of some type, and then we'll set up questions.
Good morning. My name is Mark Harris, and I'm a lawyer, and I represent Dr. Sade. And it's been my experience that it really is more helpful to the committee if I let my client make a statement reflecting her position rather than my doing a lot of talking unless you have questions. And so without further taking your time, I asked Dr. Sade to prepare a statement which reflects her position. You have our detailed response in the file. I thought it would be helpful, particularly in view of Mother's statement, for Dr. Sade to make a statement to put this in some perspective.
And we just want to make no diagnoses or thought of that, you know, you can generalize. Does that make sense?
Can I describe the child's functioning, or is that too specific?
Let's see where it
comes. Okay. If it's too specific, our attorney will be nodding.
I'll talk slow.
Okay. Thank you.
So good morning. I'm here to answer any questions you have. This is a very complex case involving a high conflict divorce and an ongoing investigation into, I probably can't say. Before I begin with the history, I might find it reassuring to know that the child's father has reported to me that the child is currently living with him. She has no physical illnesses that require medical attention. She is doing well in her new school without disability services. She is engaging in typical teen activities like having sleepovers with friends, running out of the gym, and participating in school clubs. When I first met the child in March 2019, she was very different. Dr. Carol Mellon proposed to the child's parents that I provide individual therapy to the child. Dr. Mellon is a court-appointed therapist who has many decades of experience. Parents met with me and consented to my services. I was struck by how much they both cared about their daughter and how much they disagreed about what had happened in their daughter's lives. When I first met the child, she appeared very vulnerable. She was afraid of engaging in ordinary activities like leaving the home without mother. She was also terrified of father, so much so that I couldn't write the word father on the whiteboard.
Most notably, she identified as having a broken body that no doctors could heal. For example, she had memorized a long list of ingredients that she could not eat. She believed she could not engage in strenuous activity. And all about details, she had very intense social anxiety. She presented as emotionally young. She reported a lot of difficulties in her school life that were contributing to her anxiety. At that point, I advised, and I don't have all of the proceedings, but I advised Dr. Mellon that this child was not well enough to continue or be in reunification. I provided treatment, EMDR treatment, after consulting with an expert in the area because of the complexity of this case. I did not want to destabilize the child. Lauren Day was my consultant. She has expertise in EMDR, eating disorders, and trauma. The child responded incredibly well to EMDR in more than a month. She was remembering positive experiences with father and was expressing the desire for her father to know her better and to have to repair that process. At this point, we slowed down treatment. Because mother and daughter had such a close connection, we wanted to allow mother an opportunity to kind of catch up therapeutically. And so she began to see Dr. Day, Ernest Day, Lauren Day, for treatment so that they could, the mother and daughter could grow together in their understanding of, you know, healthy relationships. At this point, Dr. Mellon decided that it was appropriate to begin reunification. And at that time, my primary role was to support the child and help her cope with that process. And I understand it might sound unusual if you're not used to this field, but what I would go out into the community with the father and daughter and provide supervised therapeutic interactions. Over the course of time, the child's anxiety about father diminished. And what Dr. Mellon and I witnessed was that child would act very differently in front of mother, and then act very different. She would present as having a lot of concerns with one parent, and then with the other parent, be fairly typical. During this time, she continued to have physical complaints that were very concerning to me. And I made a report to the department about suspected abuse. The case was not taken. I was working as a team very closely with Dr. Day, or Lauren Day, who is treating mother. She has expertise in a condition that was very, or was suspected, and Dr. Mellon has expertise in the forensics. And I was helping the team understand what the child was experiencing and needed, what her window of tolerance was, could she handle, you know, how much was she regressing after a visit with her father. So I could go into so much detail. I don't want to do more than that. Do you want to move to questions?
Yeah, we can move to questions. That's a good summary.
Okay.
And we have read everything.
Okay.
So the focus right now is strictly on the, I can't, I'm sorry, there's a hand back there.
Is it legal to be recording this?
It's being recorded by the board.
That's my, this is a public meeting.
I just want to make sure.
Yeah. All right, thank you for being here. And so then thanks for your summary. A couple questions. I'm going to start since I'm the lead on this. And you alluded to this, but just from a, and I'm not a psychologist. We have psychologists on board, we have a behavioral analyst, thank you. It's stressful for everybody that's reviewing this case. So can you explain, you know, I generally understand that your supervised therapeutic interaction out in public, and is that a standard practice in the business, and do you do that with other clients, and here the whole point is that to supervising the interaction between the two individuals,
but explain if that's something that happens with other regularly in this field.
Absolutely. The purpose of that is to, especially with a child who is as fragile as this child, we wanted to make sure that she was as supported as she could be during those interactions. And it would be very simple things. She would check in with me and see, how is she that day? Okay, you're all right, we can do this. Go have an interaction and then decompress with me afterwards. You're stable, you're okay to go. And during the interaction, they were awkward together. They had little things like, how do you talk about your day? We weren't doing therapy, but I was helping Father open up to her, learn how to talk about himself, and the same thing with her. And that's honestly how things like dating came up. As a 15-year-old girl, she struggled with concepts like dating, and so helping her almost become desensitized to talk about that kind of thing, which occurs in high schools. I would ask Father, you know, what was your dating like when you were in high school? And then I would do the same thing with Mother and say, this is, you know, people talk about this. It's okay to have romantic relationships. And modeling those interactions. And then also sharing with the TI, Dr. Mellon, how is it going?
And could you discuss, and it came up, Coach Miller, what his role was and the relationship there?
Yes. So Ben Miller was my long-term partner. I just want to be absolutely clear. I never told the child I broke up with him or that I was dating him. I have worked with Coach Miller on about 20 different cases. I specialize in explosive, treating kids with explosive rage, teenagers who can be violent. I sometimes go into the home and in the community, and having a male-female dynamic was very useful in dealing with those PTSD issues. I, in fact, just used Coach Miller this past week as almost like a bouncer to help kids stay safe while we have difficult conversations. He's my employee. I had insurance on him. The consent form shows that he was under my direction and control at all times. He in no way engages in therapy. He is a licensed massage therapist, which sometimes can be helpful with young children who their bodies are how they express and hold stress. In this case, I warned the parents by email that massage may be available to the child, especially because she was so tense. Her relationship with her body was so negative. So helping her calm down through just a little shoulder and neck head massage was therapeutic. Mother knew of it. At the end of the session, when she came to pick up the child, she said, oh, I wish I could get a massage too. It was very transparent.
Oh, about
my personal relationship.
So you just mentioned that you did not tell the child that you had dating or you broke up?
No, he was irrelevant. He wasn't in, I don't know how that information came out. In fact, Mr. Miller and I don't want to disclose my personal relationships. We are very fortunate.
Right. So, but I guess the comment was, so you're saying that you never told her?
No.
Okay. All right, I'm looking for the, could you also talk about the issue with the doctor's appointment?
Yes. So when the child discharged from treatment back to me, and this is something I might be important, so I want to mention it if it's all right. It's in videos. You have captured me saying this to the child. Now that she was living with Father, I told her my job is to help you stay connected with Mother. That's what we're going to work on now because you're not together. And what's happening is the child is having some menstrual issues and was having questions about how to use her pill packet. And when I talked about it with her, she got confused. I talked to Dr. Holland about this, and then we both became concerned that on her first visit to a doctor, after being separated from mother, it may be complicated about how to identify medical issues that were supported by data. Once mother, and by the way, father was very thankful that I was willing to do this, because menstruation is not his favorite topic. Once mother objected, I stopped, I didn't go.
And then there was a concern about not providing information to Purdue High School. I know you addressed it, but you could address it here.
Sure. I did not share information with that school that I thought would be embarrassing for the child and irrelevant to to educational issues. Is that enough?
I think mother's concerned some of the things she felt important that you didn't, but you felt, right, what I'm hearing is what you're saying is you felt personally you didn't need the data, you weren't important documents?
Well, it was mother's data seemed to be trying to support her hypothesis that father was a dangerous man and that child could not live safely with him.
And this is after she's living with father and in with high school.
That was in July when we were coordinating those services. So during the transition meeting, the intake meetings, which mother participated in and could have shared information if she so chose.
Okay. I am searching, I can't find it for the paradigm letter. And see what page is that on for you? I do not see it.
Are you referring to the letter from Carol, or Dr. Newman from Paradigm to the court?
Page 28. Oh, there it is. Okay. So that letter was had pretty strong language in it.
Yeah.
Say the least.
Yeah. And so, you know, I want to make sure we address this, because I think this was one of the, you know, when you read this, and then I think you have in your response a lot, but you know, it's from a person, paradigm of where the child went, I guess, for services, and talks about, you know, that they feel like they should have structured family therapy that you're not providing, talks about how they feel you're leaning toward father, I believe that was what they're saying. Talks about, let me go through this, but basically feel that they're the bias. What is your response to this? Because I'm sure if I had received this, you know, there's obviously some communication or something. Can you explain your perception or your recollection of what happened with that whole situation? Because that seems to be somewhat of an important issue here.
Yeah. Thank you for asking. I am confused, but here's what I know. I referred, Dr. Lauren Day and I helped choose Paradigm as the place for the child to go. I had positive experiences there before. I have climbed one line, so I was going to refer there. It was appropriate for a lot of different reasons. We vetted the place for this specific case by saying, do you have experience with high conflict divorces and the medical issues? And they said yes. At first, it was a great fit. For the first week or two, the child was improving tremendously and bonding with the team there. At some point, I don't know how it shifted or why, because I was the liaison between the Arizona team and the Paradigm team. There was concern that the protocols that needed to be followed at that institution weren't going to be followed because therapists were believing that the reason we were using the protocols couldn't be true. And so that's where the Arizona team, which honestly I really was just the messenger back and forth, Lauren Day and communicated with them, explaining why best practices have to be followed. My job was, I got the COO of the company and the head of the therapy team to have a meeting with the Arizona team, and they were in agreement with us. We have to follow best practices here. Apparently, the people who were providing treatment on the front lines disagree. I never spoke to Dr. Newman. She's never contacted me or anybody from the Arizona team. If she had reached out to me, I would have said, hey, let's talk about this. That's really confusing where this is coming from. I'm guessing that she thought she was doing the right thing. I don't know if it's the case where the left hand and the right hand didn't talk to each other. That's all speculation.
So did she reach out? She did not reach out?
Never.
There was no concern when the child left, what was under that circumstance?
My father could no longer afford to pay. So she had spent the first 30 days or so. And there was concern, too, because he didn't even like the way Paradigm was treated. They wouldn't give him updates. They were very rude to him when he went out to visit. He felt as though that facility had aligned with water. So Dr. Mellon then helped form the discharge plan, which was following a protocol that required the child not to live with mother. Does that answer your question?
And then, there's one other incident I just told you about. I wanted to address. It escapes me. Maybe it'll come back to me. All right. Any Dr. Flowers or Dr. Andrews open any questions?
I have a few. I don't know if Dr. Flowers has any.
Yes, I do too. But we'll go ahead.
Okay. You're no longer seeing the patient, correct?
No.
So what is your current correspondence with the father, and what is the nature of the relationship with the father today?
Father, my relationship with father is totally appropriate. By the way, I alerted him that in these cases, usually what happens is that father and I are accused of having an inappropriate relationship by the other parent. Dr. Mellon jokes now she's accused of Alzheimer's, but in the past, that's often what happens. Father, right now was my relationship with father. I provided continuum of care consultation to the existing therapist, to Lauren Day, who needed to see the child due to emergency circumstances. I have no relationship with father. He stops by the office sometimes to see Dr. Mellon and I. And then we say, okay, it's time to go and see your new treatment team and push him in that direction. He has his own therapist, and he might show up and say, oh, this is the problem I'm having. And he'll say, wow, that is a problem. This is to go see you on the top of it. So he does see our office as a safe landing spot, but there's no therapy, no romantic involvement, there's no friendship. Does that answer your question?
It does. I read that there was a possibility that you were seeing father for sessions while the individual was in the mental health facility. What was the nature of those sessions?
Oh, I provided a lot of services while the child was away. And those are what I call professional services because they aren't really psychotherapy. That was case management. That was coordinating communication among the Arizona team and the Paradigm team. At one point, I was asked by both, or offered, and both parents agreed, that I would research boarding schools and insurance requirements to see if we could find a good fit for the child to live outside the home. I was monitoring mother-child communications. And then enrolling the child in a new school was not as easy as one might
think it would be. So Dad needed a lot of hand-holding during that. For instance, he would say, I enrolled the child, and then get a message saying that she's not enrolled. He was very stressed and overwhelmed by the paperwork. And so I would work with the school psychologist there and say, okay, what's needed here? Birth certificate? Okay, let's get the birth certificate. And then I provided considerable consultation to Dr. Mellon, who needed to write TI reports. So that's why the services fee is so large for that month. Two more. One question, I'm going to go back a little bit to Mr. Miller. In the informed consent, it is not mentioned what services Mr. Miller would be providing. How did you explain to families his role, and was he a licensed massage therapist?
Yes, he's a licensed massage therapist. And by the way, some families that I worked really closely with, they did know that we were partners. Because they would see us every day for a couple of hours, and you get to know those people very well. So what services did he provide? He, honestly, he's 6'7". He got a lot of the rough and tumble play. So the children would get dysregulated, and then they would wrestle and do balls and all sorts of things like that. It's skills work. It's not therapy, you know, like, am I answering your question? I want to make sure of you. You're asking me what would he do? Honestly, sometimes I just needed him also to like carry the stuff. Because when you're working out of your car and going into homes, it's a lot of work. And having an assistant do that stuff as well is good. When he did massage with kids, it was always over the clothes. And it might just be lotion and arms. And some, you know, attachment activities were other non-trained therapists would do that as well. Another thing he would do is he would sit in with parent meetings with me. And it was so fascinating because I'll tell the parents something, and then they'll say, yeah, I understand. And then they'll go talk to Ben, and they'll be like, what was she saying? And he'll say, this is what she's saying. And then they have to restate it to them, and they're not embarrassed about needing some additional reminders or that kind of thing. So I hope that answers your question. Yes, thank you.
Dr. Flowers?
Yes, I had several. Looking at some of the notes, there's one on the 13th of June 2019 where it talks about traveling by Uber to the father's home. And then later it says that you spent time in the library with the client discussing and decorating a room and sharing childhood stories. And, you know, I mentioned previously also you had planned to go to a doctor's appointment with the client. I don't understand, or please kind of explain what your role was as far as providing therapy and how these activities would be part of that.
Sure.
That's, I just want a clarification, because it's not frequent that I would hear that a client would go to a library with somebody or travel with somebody to somebody's house. Can you tell me, you know, give me information so I can understand that better?
Yes. So I offer clients very intensive services. And these are the kinds of services that some kids need because of the level of their impairment. So one different family, I went to their home and we went swimming in their pool. I brought my bathing suit and I went swimming. So the kids needed that trust activity in the water. And they needed the soothing of the water. And that is definitely therapeutic. We're teaching attachment, we're teaching calming skills, all that. So when it comes to this particular child, she was terrified of taking an Uber. She thought, you know, we're going to be kidnapped. How can you trust this person? And so we wanted her, it was an opportunity to practice emotion regulation and calm down, reality checking. It was such a short drive, too. It was like 3 miles. And then she got to feel proud afterwards. Oh my gosh, I did this. This was a child who's afraid to text message people. She was terrified of the world. And that, when it was in the library, it was in the library of her father's home. And so Dr. Mellon wanted the child to have a visit at dad's house. And I went with as that support. And so we talked while we were there. And the reason I documented what I did is she was able to recall them incidents from the past without dissociating while in father's home. Her language was coherent, and she was able to sustain an organized narrative while in father's home, which, if there was traumatic stress, I would see those skills go offline. She was able to do that kind of stuff. So that's what that note means to me. Any other questions?
Well, I'm wondering, too, looking at the documentation, there's to the board's page 177, it says it's a diagnosis and treatment plan done on March 27, 2019. It gives our P's birthday as being like in 1970. I'm guessing that must be an error.
Yeah, that was father accidentally put in his birthday instead of the child's birthday when filling out his client portal.
Okay. So I'm wondering if the diagnosis and treatment plan just was a diagnosis and a presenting problem of just one symptom. Is this something that you prepared, or is this, because it doesn't look like there's much there.
You're right. And this is where my practice isn't very traditional. My treatment plan is informed by Dr. Mellon, Lauren Day, and the quickly evolving circumstances of this case around May. The child experienced a significant medical problem that kept her out of treatment for a while, and that showed me she needed to slow down. So you're right in that if you're looking for a linear, systematic treatment plan, in my notes you won't find one. But what you'll find is an EMDR target sequence that we're working through. And then I had a lot of correspondence with parents about where we were. For the parent who wasn't, my general practice is that if mom brings the kid in, I call dad at the end of the session and say, this is what's going on, and vice versa. Here, sometimes we used to email more because it was so complicated.
Okay, I appreciate getting those added insights. Thank you.
I remember my question. In regards to the child's health issues, did you ever speak to any of her medical doctors?
Dr. Mellon did.
Great. And so her health, GI or whatever, those kind of medical doctors? Somebody did.
I believe Dr. Mellon was questioning why the child had not been to see her GI specialist in a specific, a long period of time, despite having repeated gastric problems. But that was not my role here.
Right. There's a letter in here from a Dr. Cato.
Oh, yes.
Dated December 19th, 2019, in regards to as a third party per se, looking at the situation and talks about her views. Do you agree with this letter?
Hey, I'd respond to this.
Whoever would like to.
Because this case presented a rather unusual symptomatology and necessarily a pertinent treatment plan, it seemed to me that it would be helpful to the committee and, if necessary, the board, to have somebody who is a nationally recognized expert in dealing with this phenomenon. And I initially called Dr. Brenda Birch at UCLA, who's a nationally recognized expert in, I'm not sure I'm permitted to...
We're just saying that in the concern.
Yes. And since she had interacted with Lauren Day in connection with this case, she couldn't help me, but she directed me to Dr. Janet Cahill, who's a nationally recognized expert in the field. I provided Dr. Cahill with all of the records, literally everything, and she prepared my request, she prepared this report, and the obvious question I put to her was, did Dr. Sadeh conform to appropriate standards in her treatment of child? And this report addresses that question.
Yes. Thank you. I just wanted to... Okay. Is there any further questions? All right. Hearing none, this committee now will deliberate amongst ourselves.
I can make one or two quick...
Did I make one comment?
Just a couple. Number one, Dr. Sadeh mentioned this earlier. First of all, the mother submitted a 63 pages of supplemental material, which we saw yesterday. I reviewed it very quickly and frankly don't believe that it implicates any statute or code provision, and so we didn't have time to respond to it, but didn't think it was necessary. I should say, however, in our quick review, I noticed that certain portions of it were redacted, and when we got the original, we found that the redacted portions were helpful to Dr. Sadeh. Two other points. As Dr. Sadeh mentioned early in her testimony, the child is thriving now and has a relationship with her father. And that, of course, was one of the primary objectives of the treatment plan. After I've reviewed all this and reviewed the expert's report, it seems to me clear that there is no code or statutory provision implicated by the mother's complaint. The complaint should be dismissed, but I would add one other thing. If the committee is unwilling to recommend dismissal or act on dismissal today, I have learned in conversations with Lauren Day and Mr. Kilfoy, the best interest attorney, that Lauren Day's report would validate Dr. Sadeh's treatment plan and conduct. And Mr. Kilfoy said that he has received a draft report from DCS, which also, he said, would support and validate Dr. Sadeh's treatment plan. That report apparently was prepared by a specialist at DCS named Drew Kaplan. So if you're not prepared to dismiss this today, I would strongly urge you to request those reports, evaluate them in considering how to resolve this matter.
May I ask, could you repeat Drew's last name?
I believe it's Kaplan.
Kaplan?
I think it's C-A-P-L-A-N, but I wouldn't swear to it. I tried to look her up online and got ambiguous information.
Thank you.
Yes, hello.
All right, I'm sorry, Dr. Flowers. I was talking to Ms. Galvin about something.
Okay.
All right, thank you for your closing comments. This is a time for us to deliberate amongst ourselves without any interruptions. I believe this is a very complicated case. And when I read through it and then you read all the responses, you know, in regards to the complaint, I feel that the doctor addressed them, I think, appropriately. I guess what I would ask from my two committee members is, you know, in regards to the therapy of going shopping, offering to go to doctors, or the Coach Miller, you know, he was on the paperwork. It's She's claiming that she did not say anything to this individual about the relationship, but does that seem appropriate? Or are there any concerns? And then there's, you know, for the treatment plan, I guess one concern I had was did someone check with the doctors? And it appears as though, from what you said, someone did check. There seemed to be some concerns, based on those concerns, the treatment plan was focused a certain way, which seems reasonable, supported by Dr. Cahill.
Cahill,
thank you. So I'm wondering your thoughts.
I have a few, Madam Chair, if I may. A couple of my concerns could be addressed with the additional documentation, but there are a few concerns that I don't know that the documentation would clarify. One for me is specifically in the informed consent, the professional services that were outlined are not included in the informed consent. So understanding, support can be shown to understand that they're being charged for all of this care coordination and case management and all of these additional services. I'm not seeing that as being clear in the documentation. I also think in general, the documentation of treatment doesn't, the documentation itself doesn't align with the information that's been shared today, which, and I would, because I'm not a psychologist, I would definitely lean to Dr. Flowers on his input on this. But I think what we've been able to hear verbally about the individual and the circumstances is not clear in the medical record. I also don't think that it's clear that any corrections to any typos in the medical record, such as the date of birth, has been attempted to be remediated. I understand that sometimes that happens because of system issues, but in general, and likely because I do a lot of insurance work, having something somewhere to clarify, hey, this error is there, for me would be best practice. I have significant concerns about the informed consent of Mr. Miller. I don't think that the informed consent covers massage therapy. I don't think that it's clear that all those skill support is something that is being discussed in the informed consent. I'm not sure that it's clear to a parent or a patient that individual is going to have hands-on touch and other types of interactions with the individual. And it does state that the any informed consent that the purpose of Mr. Miller would be to carry out some of the recommendations of the doctor. And we see that a lot in kind of the tier behavioral health side of things. I'm just concerned that massage therapy was not always specifically outlined. And then I have, again, this is coming from probably more of my knowledge of behavior analytic ethics, but it mirrors what we've got on psychology ethics related to and the effects of of personal problems and conflicts as it may pertain to the therapeutic value of services being provided. So we have a doctor here that says that Mr. Miller's services were clinically necessary for the child. The massage therapy was something that was necessary for the child, yet we don't have anything to show that when that relationship was severed, that continued clinical service was provided, or clinically recommended service was provided, or referral out to somewhere else was provided, or something of that nature. Those would be the concerns that I have. I do think that as far as the complaint itself as to whether or not the services being provided were outside of the realm, I am, as a behavior analyst, we provide in the community, and so for me it's not unusual to see treatment that generalizes across environments. And as it pertains to psychology, that could look different in ethical standards, but I am a proponent of generalization of these things. My concern is that the documentation isn't clear to really clean up the potential other concerns that I've given.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Flowers.
Yes, I share similar concerns. I question the appropriateness of traveling with clients and going in Uber, those kind of things. I could imagine doing the shopping. I can understand the rationale, but it doesn't really seem to be, it's just kind of hard to explain and justify the idea of going to a medical appointment with a patient. It just sounds like beyond what a psychologist would be doing. And that record keeping, I think, is inadequate. The ones I mentioned, there is very little indicated about what the treatment plan was, so forth. Very little detail in there. I think, too, is the issue about involving our Coach Miller. It's like, it may sound like a nice idea, but I don't know that that would be considered part of therapy necessarily. Maybe some environments that would be okay in a residential treatment facility, or I'd have to figure out how that would fit in even there. So those are the key issues I'm concerned about on this case.
Thank you, Dr. Gibson, were you saying that going out in public with clients on a therapy is within that realm?
In behavior analysis, yes, we can generalize, but I don't know how that translates to psychological practices. I will tell you, in integrated healthcare, it is encouraged that we're generalizing across environments as well. Again, whether that is something that's done under the realm of psychology, I would have to look to my psychologist peers to determine that. But I can tell you that there is research and evidence to support that generalization. Typically when we're generalizing across environments or settings or what have you, our documentation is very clear and apparent that we're doing it for a therapeutic guidance.
And with really the comments, I think that there's enough concern here to take it to the full board for review. And I would potentially add a motion there's the potential violation of ARS 32-2061-16, and it would be H, failing or refusing to retain or retain adequate business, financial, or professional records pertaining to psychology services provided to client and patient, because records was one of the concerns. And the other one is O, providing services that are unnecessary or unsafe or life engaging activities as a psychologist that are unprofessional by current standards of practice. And I think that's the conversation with going out public. And that could be really looked at all from the board, because it'll have a lot more input. So that would be the two that I would motion.
Would you expect an amendment to add DD, which is related to violating an ethical standard set by the board?
I've got
310.
310 is consent.
Yep, 310 for consent, 305 for multiple relationships. We've got 2.06 for personal problems and conflicts.
206?
Yeah. Those would be the four. So 310, 305, and 206.
Okay, I think those are good amendments. Madam Chair?
I will accept the amendments. So just so we're clear, it's 32-2061-H, O, double D, and that's the ethical code referring to 3.10, 3.05, and 2.06.
Yes.
All right, so that's the motion. Is there a second?
A second.
There's a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any nays? Hearing none, motion carries. All right. We'll be contacted, both of you, by our staff in regards to when this issue will come before.
Do you provide a disc of this proceeding, Chief?
The audio will be online later today, or you can request a disc.
You actually do a type of...
Not a transcript, no.
We got to do that. Okay.
All right. We are going to now move to
case number 2021.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I didn't realize to go this long. I need to be done by 11:30.
Okay.
I wonder if we could go to the one that I...
Yes, let's go to, we're going to move to the complaint E, number T-2004, Dr. Frederick. Dr. Flowers, would you like to provide a brief summary?
So the one you were going to call will be after that?
We're going to call another one after that.
Okay, the complaint is that on November the 4th, 2019, Jake Candlewind, a psychiatric independent medical examination with Dr. Parker in his Phoenix office. JK completed psychological tests or the evaluation. Those tests were sent to Dr. Frederick for interpretation. JK found out that Dr. Frederick was interpreting the tests when the report was released. Found out that Dr. Frederick is not licensed as a psychologist in Arizona. Because of this, JK believes that what he was doing is a violation of statutes regarding the practice of psychology in Arizona. He said also that Dr. Frederick offered several statements reports rather than assistant Dr. Frederick scoring raw data and authors his report as if she met with Jake King in person. And then the response was given through Mr. Aiken, his counsel. It's somewhat lengthy, but I'll hit some of the highlights of that. Dr. Frederick is licensed in Missouri, he resides there, and he's also licensed in eight other states. He provides consultative services to forensic psychiatrists who administer the questionnaires and forensic assessments and then send them to Dr. Frederick's office in Missouri, and who then scores and interprets them. In the form of clinical hypotheses, which are based on his knowledge of normative data and research of individuals who respond certain ways. He's not known as the names of the individuals being evaluated, but he is given some basic data about their issues. In regards to the current case, he says that was contacted by Dr. Parker, who's licensed to practice in medicine in Arizona and board certified in psychiatry and forensic psychiatry. Dr. Frederick's client is Dr. Parker, not J.K. Dr. Parker conducted the psychiatric evaluation in regards to the workers' compensation claim. Dr. Parker had J.K. complete some psychological testing and we asked Dr. Frederick to score the test and provide reporters findings and interpretation. The report from Dr. Frederick, the ultimate question, has been rather contained various hypotheses for Dr. Parker to consider as part of the forensic evaluation. Dr. Frederick did not conduct a psychological assessment of J.K., never met him, and has no records about him. He only knew the information is necessary to provide reliable test interpretation, which is a basic demographics and context of the assessment. In regards to the allegation that he practiced psychology in Arizona without a license, it was indicated that statute says that the practice of psychology is the psychological assessment, diagnosis, treatment, or correction of mental, emotional, or behavioral abilities, illnesses, or disorders, and that he did none of those things. He provided consultation from his office in Missouri under his Missouri license. And also, he indicated on the report that statements in the report were based on comparison to published group data. Statements constitute hypotheses for the primary evaluator to consider the clinical assessment of the individual who completed the test. Dr. Frederick states that these caveats established that he was not conducting a psychological assessment of the person being evaluated by the psychiatrist. Dr. Frederick did not offer diagnosis or treatment recommendation that might suggest he conducted a psychological assessment of J.K. His opinions about the statements made by J.K. when completing the questionnaire were based on normative data, published test guidelines, and peer review research. It also indicates that he was practicing under his Missouri license, and this is done within Missouri. He said he's also aware that in Arizona, you can, if you have a license in another jurisdiction, you're allowed to practice psychology in another, you can practice psychology in Arizona up to 20 days per year. And he requests that the complaint be dismissed. So that leaves my summary of the complaint.
Thank you, Dr. Flowers. I have two speaker request forms. I have Dr. Frederick and Dr. Akins.
I believe the complainant, JK, is on the line.
Oh, I'm sorry. JK?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I guess I didn't see your form here. Thank you for being here today. We really appreciate it. Would you like to make some statements to the board?
Yes, I would. He violated the law. The law says that he has to notify me that he is not licensed in Arizona, and he never did that. He never met me. He didn't accurately portray himself as he's talking in the report like he was there. He was not there. I've never met him. He doesn't know anything about me. He doesn't score it as being a police officer. It has nothing to do with workman's comp. It has to do with my retirement. So he's completely misinformed. This report is for retirement planning, not for workman's comp. He violated the law, and he should have his license revoked in Arizona.
All right. Thank you. Are there any questions for the complainant? I went, were you told that the scores would be sent to a third party to be evaluated?
No, I did not. No, I wasn't.
All right, thank you.
He offered several opinions in the report that you guys were provided with, and he asked as if he's talking or as if I was in front of him, and that wasn't the case.
All right, thank you. We also have speaker request forms from Dr. Frederick, which I believe is on the line, and Dr. Akins, who is representing, I'm assuming, Dr. Frederick.
Dr. Frederick, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Very good. Let me make my appearance. I'm Dr. Aaron Akins. I'm counsel for Dr. Frederick. He can announce his appearance and also that I know he has a brief statement to provide to you.
Thank you. Dr. Frederson.
Yes.
Did you have a statement you'd like to make?
Yes, I do. So thank you for allowing me to address the board screening committee concerning the assertion that I have somehow represented myself to be an Arizona psychologist. I know that you have to investigate any allegations made to the board, and my intention is to cooperate fully with your inquiry. In no way have I ever held myself out to be an Arizona psychologist. I've been licensed to practice psychology for more than 30 years. For most of that time, I've worked primarily under the Missouri license that I obtained in 1992. Missouri is where I live and where my professional office is located. I'm also licensed in 8 other states where I have sometimes evaluated others or might do so in the future. If I think I might be more considered to be the practice of psychology in the state, I first obtained a license to do so. I've always done that. I'm board certified by the American Board of Professional Psychology and Forensic Psychology, and also by the American Board of Assessment Psychology. I'm a subject matter expert in forensic testing. Most of my current work involves providing consultation to attorneys and to forensic psychiatrists on matters related to psychological testing. I haven't been involved in any patient care since 2012. When I consult a forensic psychiatrist, I offer testing, test scoring, and interpretive services regarding examinees. These individuals are completing forensic assessments and are not patients even of the psychiatrist. My work typically involves preparation of a brief report intended to provide hypotheses to the forensic psychiatrist. The psychiatrists are the evaluators. I'm the testing consultant. I specifically indicated in my testing reports that all statements are only hypotheses for the psychiatrist to consider in their assessments. I never conduct any psychological assessment of individuals myself, and I generally know no significant details about the person being evaluated by the psychiatrist. The psychiatrist never invite me to assist them in their opinions, diagnoses, conclusions, or recommendations. It is their work alone. I assist forensic psychiatrists by offering evidence-based hypotheses based on test scores generated by the examinee's responses to standardized inventories that the examinee has completed for the psychiatrist. I score the test and I generate interpretive statements based on comparisons to the published group data published in test manuals and peer-reviewed literature. The interpretations are not based on any personal history or characteristics of the individual. In my report to Dr. Parker, as I always do, I listed myself as a Missouri psychologist and even provided my Missouri license number. I never claimed to have an Arizona license and did not represent myself in that way. I was consulting to my client, Dr. Parker, who knows full well that I have a psychologist license and practicing in Missouri. Now, concerning the complaint of JK, please recall that I did not conduct a psychological assessment of JK. I provided no diagnosis of JK. I offered no treatment recommendations. JK asserts that I offered my test interpretation report to Dr. Parker as if I met him in person. I disagree. I've never met JK, and my report never implied or suggested that we had met. The only information I was provided about JK in preparing my report was that JK is a 35-year-old man, a married man, a Caucasian man, a disability applicant, and a police officer. My interpretive report was dependent upon none of these personal attributes, and I made no mention of these or any other personal attributes of JK in my report. My report clearly stated that hypotheses were generated were based on comparisons to published group data. Now, regarding the idea that test interpretation consultation provided by me in Missouri could possibly represent psychological practice in Arizona, please let me offer the following. For about 25 years, the Pearson Testing Corporation has been distributing scoring software authored by me for a test that many Arizona practitioners choose when they are conducting forensic assessments. I am the author of the VIP, which is the validity indicator profile, and I wrote the VIP scoring program, and I wrote the VIP interpretive report that is generated from VIP test scores. The interpretive report offers opinions and hypotheses about the person who completed the VIP based on their responses, based on normative data, and based on no personal information of the test taker. My VIP interpretive report can reach up to 9 or 10 pages. It is clearly a form of consultation by me to Arizona practitioners about the meaning of test scores. That is my specialty. On every VIP printout, I am clearly identified as the author of the interpretive report. But no one has or is going to argue that I am practicing in Arizona when any Arizona practitioner pays for Pearson software with my algorithms to score the VIP and to generate the VIP interpretive report that I authored. Even if, as happened here, a practitioner such as Dr. Parker can put copies of that interpretive report and paste it into his own report, attributing authorship to me, no one has or is going to argue that I'm holding myself out to be an Arizona psychologist simply because an Arizona practitioner paid for consultation from me about the potential meaning of test scores through Pearson software. I assert there's nothing different here. I need not be licensed in every state from which someone consults to me in my Missouri office about the potential meaning of test scores. I am dedicated to always representing myself transparently and accurately. Operating professionally and ethically is a serious matter that I have never taken lightly. I am committed to being lawful in all my work. And to conclude, I appreciate the opportunity to have offered my statement. I'm ready to clarify any element of this matter. I've never practiced psychology in Arizona. I have never represented myself to be an Arizona psychologist. And I respectfully request that the matter before you be dismissed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Frederick, Dr. Gregson. Questions from the board?
Yes, Madam Chair. I'm wondering, I'm sure you do a lot of work, but back in 2019, approximately how many consultative reports did you do for, like, Arizona cases? Do you have any idea? I mean, this was one. Were there others as well?
I probably have done about 60 a year.
Okay, out of Arizona.
Right.
Okay.
60? 60.
Okay, but none of those were done within Arizona. I mean, you didn't mean
no, sir.
Nothing like that. Okay.
No, sir. I've never done that.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yes.
Dr. James Wilson? So just to clarify your statement, you're stating that you're the only services you're providing is an interpretation of the scores. You're doing it blindly in the sense that you're just given the, and as you mentioned, minimal data information about the client, and you're interpreting scores based on whatever system it is that type of test you're giving. Is that correct?
Well, it's essentially correct. But just to be clear, I'm not sending the scores, so I have to create the scores through the scoring software that the publisher is providing. So I'm sent the answer sheets that the examinee answered for the psychiatrist. So the psychiatrist presents the test sheets, the examinee provides them to the psychiatrist, and at that point, I'm consulted, please score these, and then please tell us what the scores mean. And so that's the service that I provide. And then, you know, I consult to them as well if there's any questions afterwards about how did you get this, or if there's some requests for the data, then I assist them in providing the data in a professional manner through the requester.
All right, thank you. Are there any other questions? All right, hearing none. That committee will now go into deliberations. Before we start, I'd like to thank both parties for participating. Dr. Flowers, you're the lead. Would you like to start with comments?
Yes, thank you. I think key issues, of course, are you know, what is stated, and within the actual report that Dr. Parker did, we do see Dr. Frederick's input at the top. You know, when it says finding, it specifically says statements in this report are based on comparison to published group data. Statements constitute hypotheses for the primary evaluator to consider in the clinical assessment of the individual who completed the test. That's key, and that was stated. It also does indicate what was found within the report, within the testing and the interpretation, but it doesn't indicate anything about meeting with the individual and those kind of things. I would invite the input of the other members, and I'd like to make a motion.
Okay,
I make a motion that the complaint be dismissed because I don't see the statutory violation.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion passes. I appreciate all parties coming forward. All right, moving on to our next case is complaint number 2021, Dr. Rizzo?
Yes, thank you.
And Dr. Davis Wilson, you're the lead. And Dr. Flowers, just to confirm, how long are you on the phone for? Till 11:30?
Yes, that will be the absolutely doctor stop time. Yes. So yeah, hopefully this can be done in a half an hour, but if not, I'll indicate when I leave, so there'll be a matter of record.
All right. And we'll be okay. Dr. Flowers, if you prefer, it's most likely you would go longer than 20 minutes.
Right? Okay.
It's up to you. You can go
okay.
On.
Okay.
It's up to
okay.
You.
Okay. It does look quite involved, and so I guess there it sounds as if it'd be more appropriate for me not to try to make you rush through it fast for my benefit, because it's important to be all heard without a sense of rush.
All right. Well, thank you for your time, Dr. Flowers. We appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Okay, bye.
Go ahead. All right, Madam Chair. The complaint CF is going to have a case of the, from a custody situation between her and her ex-husband. In the complaint, she states the lack of thoughts of treating her minor child. She was not court appointed to do so. However, she did submit a family, a letter to the family court that was unsolicited. In submitting that letter, the judge did issue a court-minute entry that stated that it was unclear whether or not Dr. Falto had provided copies to all of the parties of the letter that she was submitting. Dr. Falto sent it unsolicited. It was an ex parte letter to the court. She provided her own opinion on litigation matters and advocated for the father in connection with the litigation.
I'm requesting that, can we just call a little bit of a recess, please?
Okay, looks like we need a little recess. We will regroup in 10 minutes?
Yes.
In 10 minutes.
For legal advice.
All right, we are back from our break. It's 11:09. I'm going to make a motion to go into executive session with legal advice. Is there a second?
I'll second. All
right, thank you. Looking at the rest of the agenda, we are going to actually continue the two cases we have left due to the composition of the committee right now. We're really great, but neither one of us are psychologists, and so we feel a little more comfortable. We have a psychologist to represent the issue. And so we are going to table it. So we do apologize. I know you've come, but I think it would be better for everyone. So you will be contacted by our staff.
And that is pursuant to statute regarding the composition of the committee. Clearly it was intended and assumed that the psychologist would be a board member. So we apologize for the inconvenience. We were not aware that Dr. Flowers had to drop off, and it's clear we could not get through these two cases.
Your excellent lawyer explained the issue to me, and we understand.
Perfect.
We're unhappy by the delay, but we understand.
All right, well, we do, again, you'll be notified when you'll be back on the agenda, and we do appreciate you being here today. All right, thank you. Thank you. So I guess that's the last item. I need a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
I second. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Oh, thank you, staff, as all.
Thank you all for your time.
Thank you. Sorry about that.
We understand.